Stu Does America.
Follow the show on YouTube, youtube.com/Stu Does America. Be sure to subscribe, hit the bell for notifications. Christian Toto is here with the latest on the left, completely destroying comedy and humor in our everyday lives. President Trump's feud with Jerome Powell maybe leveled off a little bit. We'll see what's going on there. But we're going to start by doing Jasmine Crockett and the road to 2026. Yes, my girl Jasmine, as you know, running for Senate here in Texas. Let me give you a little update on the race. Jasmine Crockett and James Tallarico sprint toward Democratic primary race for Texas Senate from CBS News. A poll last month from Texas Southern University showed Crockett leading Tallarico by 8 percentage points, 51 to 43, with 6% undecided. During a recent campaign stop in Fort Worth, Crockett told CBS News Texas, "I will always run like I'm behind. That's the only way I know how to run. So let me tell you, if I'm not in D.C., I will be here in Texas fighting to earn every single vote that I can." That's our girl. Inspiring. An inspiring candidate, Jasmine Crockett. Now, you might say, wait a minute, isn't she a crazy leftist? Why are you saying she's our girl? Because I want her to win this primary so very badly. I want her to run in basically every race that I follow, because she's just absolutely fantastic. Now, it's clear that the outcome of that race needs to be her losing by devastating margins, or honestly, by just one vote. I don't care what it is. As long as she loses, I want her to keep running over and over and over and over again, because the entertainment value is so very high. And it also allows us to give a nice little picture of what the policies look like from the left. When we describe someone like Jasmine Crockett or AOC or Elizabeth Warren, they give us a very easy person to look at when we say, hey, this is the nut job policies we're trying to avoid. Now, there's a little bit of flair from our girl Jasmine that makes a little bit more interesting than an Elizabeth Warren, but of course, both minorities. And we should point that out. Native American for our girl, Elizabeth. This is, you might say, like, okay, well, if you like Jasmine Crockett or at least want her to win a primary and lose an election, you must love the news that she's ahead by 8 points. And of course I did. We talked about it at length when this happened, and we said it was the greatest thing that's ever happened to our country. However, I have some terrible news. It seems like, and I don't know how to break this news to you, but it seems like when people see Jasmine Crockett speak or hear her policies, what they tend to do is recoil instantly. And of course, that's part of the reason I want her to win, right? Yes, there's the entertainment value, but also I want her to be the face of the Democratic Party. Why? Because people will probably reject the Democratic Party. What I don't want is the Democrats to realize that before the primary is over. That's the line we're fighting with right now. And I have some absolutely terrible, terrible news to break to you today. I hope you're sitting down. Texas 2026 poll. Tallarico leads Crockett for Democratic Senate nomination. Cornyn and Paxton face potential runoff. This is crushing. It's crushing. And look, it's not over yet. Still got plenty of time here to turn this around, but I am a little nervous in that she was up 8 last time, and now James Tallarico, 47%, Jasmine Crockett, 38%. Ahmad Hassan, who's a wonderful individual that I've never heard of, at 1%. Still 15% undecided, though. That's 15% that could go to our girl, Jasmine Crockett. She is losing now, and that's a 17-point swing from the last time the poll. Look, when people hear, it becomes unfair if we're going to allow her to be heard. When she, of course, if people are hearing her speak and listening to her policies, well, of course she's going to lose. That's unfair. We shouldn't be focusing on those things. That's not what Jasmine's here to do. Very disappointing. I'm disappointed in you, Texas. How dare you not put her on the ballot? I want her to win that primary so she can lose by 68 points in the actual election. What are the election issues that are facing Texas right now for people making this decision? Well, the economy, threats to democracy, is in second place at 17%, 28% from the economy. 14% say immigration, which is way down, by the way. This is an interesting trend, and it's going to affect this race if it doesn't turn around. Healthcare, 9%, housing affordability, 8%, and education at 6%. By the way, we did mention the Republican primary as well, very, very tight. Ken Paxton, 27%, John Cornyn, 26%, Wesley Hunt, 16%. If you don't know anything about this race or you don't follow Texas all that closely, the Democrats are rooting for Ken Paxton in a way. They definitely do not want him to win because he has been a thorn in their side over and over and over and over and over again. They do see him as more vulnerable than John Cornyn because he's had some personal issues and some baggage on that front. Cornyn, of course, is barely a Republican at all, so they can kind of deal with him, even though he will tend to vote generally a little bit to the right of center, but very, very little to the right of center. They can deal with that out of Texas. And Wesley Hunt is the third place guy, someone maybe that should be considered if you don't like, maybe a Paxton. I say you got to get Cornyn out of there. You can't give the seat up. So number one, you got to make sure you're winning the seat. Cornyn probably wins the seat, I will acknowledge. Paxton makes it a little bit more, maybe a little bit tighter, though Paxton will absolutely beat Crockett and honestly will probably beat anyone the Democrats will put up. Your chances are very high of that happening. And then Hunt is kind of the unknown in the race, but still getting enough that this could go to a runoff or really move in either direction in a major way. We are not to the end of this quite yet. Talrico is out there. He's calling the National Party condescending. And you see the approach here. From a Democrat calling his national party condescending. And you think, well, normally wouldn't that get them in trouble with the Democratic Party? Not in this particular race, because there is a dynamic going on in this Democratic primary. You have, of course, Talrico trying to take this "I'm one of the sane ones" approach. This is Texas, okay? If you come out acting like a lunatic, you're obviously going to lose. Did I mention Jasmine Crockett is in this race? So what he's trying to do is saying, hey, I'm in this race. I'm a Democrat. I don't like these ICE raids either, but I'm not. And to be clear, you should hear this very clearly from me. I'm James Talarico. It's not that I approve this message is the tagline. It's I'm James Talarico and I am not Jasmine Crockett. What he's trying to say is I'm not her. I'm not AOC. I'm not the crazy ones. I'm not, what's this? Mom Donnie. I'm none of that. I'm one of the rational ones. You can vote for me. And we've seen various approaches at the attempts to try to win in Texas from Democrats. Sometimes there's been the abortion Barbie approach, right? Female, feminist, I'm going to win this because I'm going to make sure your abortion rights are protected. You had the sort of lunatic leftist approach from a guy like Beto O'Rourke, who started off kind of as this mildly centrist Democrat. Then when he was running for the Senate, went way, 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 way left. That blew up in his face. He then went even farther left running for president. That blew up in his face. He keeps trying and trying and trying. And every time, everything he does blows up in his face. And then you had a guy last time, Allred, who was he wanted to make sure you understood this, a former football player. Every one of his ads was exactly the same. And it was closer to this Talarico approach, which was like, I'm the sane one, I promise you. Texas generally doesn't buy that. If there's a really unpopular Republican, it's possible that they might buy it. It might be a close election. But the chances of a Democrat winning in the state of Texas are still very, very small, even in an environment that does increasingly look friendly to Democrats. And that's something we're going to get into here in a moment. Here is Talarico trying to walk this line on with Ezra Klein.
Texans threw Democrats out at this point a fair amount of time ago. I don't know exactly how many years it's been 30. Since there's been a statewide Democrat in Texas, but yes, I believe it's 30. What is it that, to you, so many Texans don't like about Democrats? And what does the Democratic Party, the National Party, not an individual candidate in Texas, what would the National Party have to do to be more appealing to Texans or to make Texans who have given up on it or felt rejected by it feel seen?
Not an expert on the National Democratic Party, but I will say, just from my observations, being in a red state, someone who flipped a Trump district and was able to build this kind of coalition, our national party is pretty condescending to people.
Not only is he not part of the Democratic Party nationally, he's not really familiar with, he's not an expert on it. He doesn't really follow what the Democrats say at the national level. If you believe that, you'll believe anything. That's the way this works. By the way, the title of this podcast, now Ezra Klein's a very specific choice here. We've talked about this before. Ezra Klein wrote a book with Derek Thompson called Abundance. This is an attempt to pick off some of the maybe people who aren't as friendly to the more populist wing and the new thing going on the right. And it is appealing to some people in that independent vibe who are saying, well, you know, like this isn't the I want to shut down all oil factories or I want to shut down all we want degrowth like policies. The abundance agenda, as defined in this book, is basically like we want to grow. We want abundance for everyone. So but we want to spread that around. Now, it's not a policy that I like, but it is much more appealing than the AOC or Jasmine Crockett version of this. So he goes on this show specifically because he's trying to appeal to that world. And that's, you know, not a choice that's just made out of happenstance. Like this is a very specific approach Tallarico's trying to do to win over not only the, you know, quote unquote sane left, but also a bunch of people in the middle and maybe some on the right who aren't fans of maybe a Ken Paxton on the right hand side. By the way, the headline for this is just despicable. Can James Tallarico reclaim Christianity for the left? I don't know. Is there anything less Christian than being like, let's use it as a political tool and bring it over to our side. Let's manipulate what Christianity is so we can get that over to align with liberal policies. I mean, it's just awful in and of itself. Now, the national picture is interesting. Democrats see a path to win the Senate. It's narrow, and it has little room for error. The House is much easier for the Democrats to win. It would be very surprising at this point if they don't win. They are going to be heavy favorites going into this year. It's not impossible. We've seen occasionally presidents able to hold the House after in their first midterm of a presidency. It's very rare. Trump knows he's going uphill against this one. This is why they were so aggressive with redistricting as we went through that process, and they continue to go down that road. How do the Democrats win the Senate? It's very difficult. They're going to have to pick off four states that are currently red, at least, honestly. But their attempts are as follows. They're going to try to win in Alaska. They do have Peltola there, who has won races in Alaska before, a Democrat. It's possible. They have Sherrod Brown in Ohio, who has a chance for sure. Roy Cooper in North Carolina, who has a chance. And then they have Janet Mills in Maine. Now, Janet Mills was a highly recruited candidate, sort of a popular governor situation. The issue, of course, is they have another person who has been very competitive in that race in the primary, which you might remember him from his Nazi tattoos. That is Graham Plattner. So we'll see how that plays out as we go forward. Now, this is a very, just to give you a quick sense of the Senate, 24 and the House, 24 members of Congress are now 80 or older when it comes to age, and more than half of them are running for re-election. It's just absolutely amazing. Of the two dozen members of the silent generation now serving in the 119th Congress, more than half, 13, have decided to run again in 2026, according to an NBC News review. In total, Congress is the third oldest in U.S. history, average age of 58.9, which seems incredibly low. Do we have some infants that I didn't realize were in Congress? Only 58.9? The median age in the U.S. is 39.1, so a tad older than the median age. Among Congress's 24 silent generation members, defined as those born between 1928 and 45, the average age is 83.8. Most are Democrats, but Senator Chuck Grassley is the oldest at 92. Now, you want to talk about the youthful part of this group. David Scott, he is only 80. Wow. I mean, a teenager in congressional terms. Seven members of the cohort are 85 or older. By the end of this year, the average age will be nearly 85. 10 members will be that age or older, and 3 will be knocking on 90's door. Makes perfect sense. Independent voters pose challenge for Trump ahead of the 2026 midterms. This is one of the issues here. I mean, the base itself on the Republican side, you know, pretty much with Trump. I mean, there's been some issues where they've fallen off, but generally speaking, are pretty much with Trump. Obviously, as we know, the left is totally against him, and almost, I mean, in the 90s, percentage-wise, so almost universal there. The problem is when you had about a 50-50 situation around the election time, that has dropped off considerably. Americans are increasingly rejecting the two major political parties. A trend could spell trouble for Donald Trump and Republicans heading into the midterms, according to new Gallup polling. Nearly half of adults, 45% now to identify as political independents. It's a sharp increase from two decades ago when closer to one third of Americans said they didn't align with Democrats or Republicans. Good job, by the way, by both parties. Nice, incredible work. Gallup's analysis suggests this growing block is driven largely by dissatisfaction with the party in power, a dynamic that has tilted toward Democrats in recent months but offers no guarantee of lasting loyalty. That's an interesting point there. I mean, that might illustrate the current situation in a somewhat appropriate manner, but generally speaking, people are just going away from both of these parties and they're going to the independents. Now, when they're independents, a lot of times they're still leaners. I'm an independent. I've been an independent forever. I've never registered with a political party. But, you know, certainly a Republican leaner, right? Like, I mean, I never vote for Democrats. I have voted many times for Libertarians and other third party candidates. But generally speaking, I'm going to vote for the conservative candidate, whatever candidate I can find that's more conservative. So I would be what they call an independent Republican leaner. The issue right now is many of these independents are especially the people who aren't leaners, are going toward the left. We're seeing a situation where only about 30% of independents support Donald Trump's policies right now. That can change, right? If the economy turns around, if things improve in various ways, that can change and swing back toward the president, absolutely. But it is a concern and a real challenge for Donald Trump, especially when viewed among the normal historical pressures of a midterm election in a presidency. If everything's fine, you usually lose. This isn't a situation where everything's fine, as we just talked about with the polling on independents. But in addition to that, they also have almost no majority. It's like a 5-seat majority. And, you know, their members keep dying. So the whole point here is it's really, really tough territory, especially in the House. What do Americans think about Trump's first year back in office? Well, you know, honestly, the polling's not that great here, to be honest with you. It's not that great. And there are specific things that are hurting Donald Trump and some that are helping him. So let's look through this. This is his second term job approval rating. And you see it is falling off. We're at about 40%. It's 59 to 40. 40% approval, 59% disapproval. You might say, well, that doesn't sound that great. It's basically where he was in the first term. If you look at the same point in the first term, he was at 58% instead of 59. On disapproval and at 40% exactly when it comes to approval. So basically, the Trump presidency, the second term, looks a lot like the first term right now. I will say what we had in the first term was a less of a drop-off. It was did not start as high. It was not really, he wasn't never really above water when it comes to approval rating in the first term. Second term did start off higher, but has fallen off more suddenly, I guess, if you want to say that, over the first year or so. Why is that happening? Well, the main reason it's happening is that people have turned against Trump on the economy. At least that's the number one issue. This is only a 37% approval rating for Donald Trump on the economy. And honestly, I think you could look at the Trump presidency, if you had no knowledge about it at all, and say the one thing that people are really going to like about Donald Trump is economic policies, right? He's known for the economy. This is one of the reasons, I would say the central reason, he was elected in 2024 to a second term. Hey, we really like that first term economically. There were things maybe the American people didn't like all that much, but they really liked the economic stuff that went on. Now, he has really changed his policies when it comes to a second term in office. He liked tariffs in term one. He loves them in term two, right? That is absolutely clear. And that's only part of the picture here, to be clear. But we haven't really seen a major economic proposal put forward. We had the big, beautiful bill. What that did is basically lock in a bunch of previously agreed upon tax decreases. That was a good policy. It needed to be done, but it wasn't like exciting to the American people. We're seeing some issues, obviously, in the economy. People are nervous about AI and what that's going to do to jobs. The job situation has been, honestly, I got to be honest with you, pretty bad. Now, part of that is a policy that I think you and I probably really like, which is shrinking the federal government. That has been part of it. But even with that, We're talking about hundreds of thousands of jobs that have been eliminated in the federal government. It's a policy I think needed to be done, and I'm in favor of it. Even when you look at that, though, we've added about 584,000 jobs in the first year of Donald Trump's presidency. That is the lowest amount of jobs we have created in a year since 2003, unless you go into a recession. So take out the recession years. We're just talking about normal economic times. This is the worst year we've had since I think it was 2003. Another part of that is 85% of those jobs happened before April. So we kind of came out of the chute really, really strong. Then we had Liberation Day with all the tariffs. And since then, we've created almost no jobs. The jobs that have been created have been almost exclusively in areas like healthcare. Now, healthcare is an important part of our economy. There's no doubt about it. It's something like 20% of our economy. But it's not necessarily the type of thing you're thinking about when you're thinking about massive growth. Like, if we need lots of healthcare workers, then there's lots of people that are sick. Not necessarily the greatest thing in the world, though it is part of our economy in a major, major way. You know, the tariffs, obviously, we were hoping they would lead to big gains in blue-collar jobs and construction jobs. So far, that has not materialized. In fact, this is the worst year we've had with blue-collar jobs in quite a long time. When it comes to manufacturing jobs, we are down significantly in manufacturing jobs. These are the jobs that were supposed to come back. Now, to be fair to Donald Trump, and this is important, that is a policy. When you're talking about tariffing other countries and bringing manufacturing jobs back to America, that is not a one-year process. And it is a 10-year, it's a 20-year, it's a 30-year process. But I will say, you know, Donald Trump's not going to be around for 30 years. So it's going to be interesting to see how all of this plays out. And this is why there's a lot of skepticism on the economy. A couple other things. You have immigration. This has been probably the most recent issue. Immigration support for Donald Trump, which was very strong and one of the strongest parts of his presidency, maybe 6 or 8 months ago, has now fallen down to 38% approval from about 50%. That is over the past 8 or 9 months. And then what is working for Donald Trump? Well, you know, this might surprise you. Foreign policy. Foreign policy is working really well. You know, you might look at Donald Trump as a profile of a candidate and say, this is a guy who's going to do really well at domestic issues, but he's never dealt with foreign policy issues. He'll probably not be as strong there. It's been the exact reverse. Frankly, the American people don't like the economic policies, or at least some of them, and really do approve of his foreign policy approach, which I think his foreign policy approach has been really, really strong in most of these areas. So that is another part of this as we go into the issues here, what we're dealing with now in Iran and Cuba and Venezuela and so many other areas. So that's kind of the picture of where we are right now. We're in a very important year. We're not that far away from an election in November. We'll, of course, be following that very, very closely, weekly and daily here on Studios America. So check that out, and we will be back in just a second. If you're waking up more tired than when you went to bed, maybe the problem isn't your morning routine at all. It might be the quality of your sleep. That's where CB Distillery comes in. Now, life is obviously very stressful. You may have noticed that. Schedules are relentless, and it always adds up to a place where, you know, maybe your body isn't the top priority. Maybe it's not bouncing back from all this stuff as regularly as it used to. CB Distillery offers clean, high-quality CBD products designed to help with better sleep and lower stress and improved mood and sharper focus and even muscle recovery after all those strong work. I'm always in at the gym, as you can tell. I'm just a gym rat. You know what I mean? I'm there all the time. It's important for me, especially for muscle recovery. You might not have 42-inch biceps like me, though, so that might not be as important to you. Over 90% of CBD users report noticeably better sleep, and over 2 million customers have already trusted CB Distillery for a reason. Every product is made with premium ingredients, no fillers, no junk, just straightforward CBD that actually does what it's supposed to do. They even make options for pets. They deserve a little less stress, right, as well. Also, 100% money-back guarantee. So why not just see if it works and judge it on its results. If you're ready to start the year off right, go to cbdistillery.com. If you use the code STU, you're going to get 25% off right now. So make sure to use that code. It's cbdistillery.com. The code is STU. Specific product availability depends on individual state regulations. Of course, it's cbdistillery.com. The promo code is STU. Joined once again by Christian Toto, film critic and host of Hollywood in Toto, the podcast you should subscribe to. He has a new piece over at The Blaze as well, under the banner of Toto Recall. It's Laugh Factory, Carbon Copy Comics, Cry Epstein on Cue. Be sure to check that out. Christian, thanks so much for coming back on the program.
Good to be here.
I love this it's like sometimes there's just comedians that have these like go-to lines, like, you know, Jim Gaffigan talks about Hot Pockets pretty much at every single show, right? The late night hosts have come to this place where now they seemingly anytime Trump does anything, they just accuse it as being somehow tied to the Epstein files. What is this phenomenon?
I don't know. Listen, it's been the left's mantra for quite some time now. And listen, there had a slight bit of relevance initially because we didn't know what was in the files. There was some concern about that for sure. But, you know, any common sense will tell you, well, if there was something really untoward in the files about President Trump, we would have known about it already because the press administration would have spread it far and wide. So the whole concept is silly, but it just really shows you the groupthink mentality that's going on in late night. They just read from the same script. They have no new ideas. There's literally no diversity. And I don't care if their writing staffs are full of people of different races and creeds and ethnicity. You know, it's the same philosophy night after night after night. And having all of them, including Jimmy Fallon, who isn't as political as the rest, read from that same script is... it's funny, but it's not ha-ha-ha funny. It's just a different kind of funny.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's like, the Epstein Files thing, I mean... I just don't understand how they can miss the disconnect you pointed out, which is Joe Biden. Yes, he was senile. And yes, I think he was dropping the ball all the time. But do I really believe that they would have let some massive scandal involving Donald Trump just run out as they were blowing this election? Like they had this big Epstein shoe to drop and we're just sitting there going like, let's just take our chances with Kamala and see how it works out. It makes absolutely no sense.
Slightly out of character for them. Yeah. And then just that kind of thinking. But, you know, I talk about the lack of diversity here. You need other people in that writing room to shake things up, to question what they're saying. I mean, I think that'd be invaluable. Even if that person doesn't get their jokes into the monologue, just say, hey, wait a minute, that maybe is a silly argument, or maybe we should rethink it. Or every time he does something, we say, oh, it's a distraction from the Epstein list. It's absurd. And yet it continues. And, you know, Jimmy Kimmel my gosh, every night it's a new low. So it's hard to even figure out how he's going to scrape the barrel this time around. But it's just sad. And listen, we have lots of friends on the center left and they're sane and they're normal and they're kind and they're decent. Who's watching these shows? Is it just the extreme far left? I mean, if there was an extreme far right version of the Kimmels, I wouldn't watch it for a nanosecond. I'd be bored. I'd be scared. I'd be like, what are you talking about? I just don't understand how they even have an audience at this point.
Yeah, it's hard to. Well, and of course, they don't. That's kind of the actual secret of the matter.
A little bit.
The audience is very small. Jimmy Kimmel, you point out, and he's one of the smallest. And he obviously had this big back and forth with the president where he tried to be Mr. Tough Guy. And yeah, he was praised by Hollywood and the left for this. He's now out there. I mean, it seems like every day he's a little bit more and more unhinged on Trump, which to be impossible. He's calling him a maniac for not only just killing people overseas, but killing an unarmed 37-year-old woman during the ICE operation. He put a shirt on TV that said that Donald Trump is going to come kill you. This is a man who's almost been assassinated multiple times.
Yeah,
you pointed out there's no one in the writing room, I guess, that would bring up this point. But like, hey, guys, are we doing a good job here? Are we first of all, are we making any jokes? And second of all, are we upping the temperature even more than it already is?
Yeah, squint all you want. You're not going to see comedy. That's not even the point at this point. Yeah. You know, the thing that makes me really sad about the culture at large is that I think it was 2017, Kathy Griffin put up that fake Trump head.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was bloody. It was disgusting. And collectively, as a culture, we recoiled. And her career just vanished overnight. And you could say, you know, she deserves to be forgiven. We can, you know, that's a separate argument. If that happened today, I don't think anyone blinks. I think people on the right would blink for sure, and they'd be upset about it. But I think center-left people, people who just go about their day-to-day business, I don't think anyone would bat an eye. That's how far we've fallen. And Jimmy Kimmel is part of the reason why. And what he's doing is wildly irresponsible. You know, for weeks and weeks, it'd be The View shouting these insane conspiracy theories. And we almost laugh them off. It's The View. Now it's Jimmy Kimmel doing that kind of material. It's wildly inappropriate. I'm a free speech guy, but you have to look in the mirror and think, is this what I want in the public? Is this how I'm helping the country? Aren't I inspiring people to do really bad things? And I hate going down that road, but the rhetoric just leads us to no other choice. That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and I think there's a little bit of like grace to someone in a certain situation, right? Like when, you know, like you make something that's a little bit of a harsh comment and are you worried about turning up the temperature? Well, you can't always worry about that, right? You can't worry about every nut job that might be listening to you on a show where millions or in his case, tens of people are watching. but like it was 18 months ago. We all sat there around our televisions as the president was bleeding on a stage because someone took a shot at him. And it's like, yes, you might really dislike this guy. Sure, you might really hate his policy. Sure, you might even really hate what he's doing with ICE. But have some sense of where the world is and all the people that are out there trying to end the president's life, trying to kill Supreme Court justices, all this stuff is going on. Maybe take a little bit of an assessment privately of what you're doing to the world.
Completely agree. And also, I think you made a really good point. Listen, we could do the whole, well, you said this, and in this context, it might be deemed inappropriate or something, or that was a dog whistle. A dog whistle is a term we've used way too often in the last 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. But what they're saying isn't a dog whistle. These are rehearsed jokes that may have been scanned by multiple people behind the scenes, that may have been rehearsed, that, you know, multiple eyes are seeing those jokes and seeing those comments. Some stagehand had to hand him that shirt that said, Donald Trump is killing you. That's unbelievable. And by the way, John Cleese, who I adore and is a comedy legend, recently put out a tweet on X. He was saying that the assassination attempt against Trump looked staged. Yeah. And of course, Selena Zito, the great reporter, said, I was there and Corey Compatori died. You're wrong. I mean, that's where we are.
Yeah, you know, I love John Cleese too, but he's just insane when it comes to this stuff. I mean, he's just beyond saving.
He's sane and insane. It's a really weird balance he's going through.
Yeah, right now. I mean, at some level, some of these guys, I'm like, they've done enough work in their life that I give them a little bit of immunity. He's this old crotchety guy saying crazy things, but it is really, really bad on that one. Let me give you another crazy person, Judd Apatow, who, and part of this, but part of my complaint here, Christian, is the boring nature of all of this, right? Like, I you know, when I watch like comedians, sometimes they'll go and they'll do these specials on like religion. Every joke about religion has been done. I don't have any interest in it. It's not that I don't think you can make fun of religion, but like it's been years and years and years and years and years of every great comedian making jokes about religion, and I'm bored of it. The same thing here with Trump. Judd Apatow says that we're in a dictatorship now. I mean, I don't know, you know, he hasn't, I'm not sure when the last time he made a good movie was, but he had a run there for a while. But it's just this idea in Hollywood where everyone agrees with the exact same thing. Saying that we're in a dictatorship is not like, wow, that's a controversial, thought-provoking statement. It's just like a dumb bumper sticker that all these guys say to their friends behind the scenes over and over again. Don't they bore themselves with this nonsense?
Yeah, you know, Judd Apatow's decline has been sad for me. I think he was a genius. I mean, he didn't just direct some great comedies, but he produced and co-wrote some as well. Just go look at his IMDb page. It's chock-a-block with great stuff.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been funny in a long time. And that's one of the reasons why he's obsessed with Trump. And there's, you know, these comments are so silly. First of all, if he was a dictator, you'd be arrested tomorrow. So there's the whole that. I mean, just to kind of break it down in the obvious ways. But it's... comedy is about surprise. It's about subversive nature. It's got so many wonderful elements to it. And just, you know, speaking to a crowd and hoping that you agree with everything they say and vice versa, he's just tired and sad. I recently saw Adam Carolla here in Denver, Colorado, and he was doing some ICE jokes, but they went in different directions where you thought they might go. And I thought, how refreshing. He wasn't trying to lecture us. He was trying to catch us off guard. I think more comedians should do that.
Yeah, totally agree. Let me move to the hero of our story here, though, which, again, he's not a conservative, but Conan O'Brien is the hero of our of this particular tale. He gives a warning to comics saying F Trump all the time is not maybe the way to go. He says some comics go the route up. I'm just going to say F Trump all the time or that's their comedy. But now I think you're being co-opted because you're so angry you've been lulled. And it's like a siren leading you into the rocks. This is... great advice, not just from the perspective of, hey, be open to maybe some of your audience doesn't want to hear that, but also just from the perspective of be creative. Like, just going out there and yelling about one guy who has been in the most famous person in the world for a decade and been in the public eye every single day since 2015, and then going back decades before that in other ways, like, that's just boring. You're just lazy if you're doing that. And I just like that messaging from Conan O'Brien. Not some big conservative messaging, just, hey, work on your craft a little bit.
It's really sad that we're talking about him as a heroic figure because he said to comedians, be funny. I mean, that's literally just what he said. And he said, basically, if you're consumed with anger, you're not going to be funny. And if you're a satirical comedian, your whole weapon is to use humor to influence people or wake them up or inspire them or just open their eyes to things they haven't thought about or even just challenge them. And that's why the whole late night scene is so dispiriting, because they do none of that. And it's not funny. And I mean, I often will read the text of what they say. I'm like, I can't even find an attempt at joke. There was some event recently and Jimmy Kimmel called President Trump Donald Jennifer Trump because his middle initial is Jennifer. I'm thinking, wow, I didn't see that coming. That's amazing. That's really funny.
So lazy, right? Like just picking a female. And it's like, of course, if a conservative comic did some sort of, they'd be on like some gender watch from some media watch group. Last one though, all this adds up to this: Golden Globes 2026 audience down 7%, only 8.66 million viewers. It continues to crash. Some of that, of course, is just media and there's more choices and everything. But I do think that there's very little appetite anymore for these award shows because A, people don't even bother seeing the movies anymore because a lot of them suck, and B, they don't want to be preached to at these award shows.
Yeah, and there's a third leg to this whole thing, and I've noticed this over the years. I grew up with Billy Crystal, and he wasn't political. He wanted to put on a show. Mm-hmm. And I think that element is often missing. And even with some of the jokes from Nikki Glaser, and she's was marginally funny, and she's often very funny. It's, I've got to tell a joke to make a point. I've got to kind of say the right things and have the right arguments and preach in a certain way. And when the whole show has that vibe, it's not entertaining and it's just not fun. These shows are incredibly long. And listen, they're filled with beautiful people. And in theory, they should be wonderful and entertaining and interesting and cool and hip. It's there, none of these things anymore. Why would you watch them? Now, the Oscars still have a little bit of cachet, and I get that. The Golden Globes, most people don't care. They just don't.
No, I kind of almost thought they were just going to go away completely. They wrapped up in scandals and everything else. It was borderline there for a while.
Yeah.
But they're going to keep trying it, I suppose. Christian Toto, film critic and host of Hollywood in Toto. It's a podcast you don't want to miss. Also, Total Recall piece is over at The Blaze. It's Laugh Factory, Carbon Copy, Comics Cry, Epstein on Cue. Has a bunch of other rundowns of what's going on in the crazy left Hollywood world. Christian, thanks so much for coming back on the program.
My pleasure.
One of the keys to unlocking the world today and also keeping yourself sane is stepping back from the news occasionally, particularly when it relates to Donald Trump, and understanding the way you're supposed to look at things. And I firmly believe the way you're supposed to look at Donald Trump is don't pay attention to every single thing that he says. Pay attention to what he does. That is, I think, the fundamental understanding of Donald Trump. And you might say, well, yeah, but we're the media, and if we don't pay attention to what he says, how will we stop it? And to that, I say to you, he doesn't care what you say. Actually, he is not considering your opinion at all on any of these matters. Just so you're aware, he's going to do what he wants to do. And I think that is, and that might come off as like a criticism of Donald Trump. It's not really. It's just an understanding of the guy, right? Like, he is a negotiator. And as a negotiator, he is constantly saying things that are not targeted at you. He's saying things that are not targeted at you. They are targeted at somebody else. It might be Vladimir Putin. It might be Kim Jong-un. It might be, Maduro. He's saying these things to try to come to a specific end. So let's look at that with that context and this particular. Trump says he has no plans to oust Powell from the Fed. He says, I don't have any plan to do that. Now, of course, look, what is he doing right now? I mean, there is an investigation going on Powell. It's quite clear he does not like Powell. The question is he going to force him out specifically? He's saying that's no. Let's see. Will he do that? We will see. Trump says he has been told that killings in Iran are stopping. Who is he talking to there? It ain't you. You know, I mean, like he's saying now there is a report from The Wall Street Journal today that he was told that a big strike on Iran might not weaken the regime enough for it to be overturned. And so maybe it's not worth doing. But again, his idea here is he's trying to now talk about this. Is he negotiating with Iranian leaders? Is he trying to prepare the United States for us not doing something in Iran? That is what we have to watch here in the coming weeks. Trump is also threatening to use the Insurrection Act to end protests in Minneapolis. Is he going to do that? I don't know. But what he is trying to communicate, I think, quite clearly to the protesters and to people in Minneapolis is he's not going to put up with this anymore. He's not going to put up with you, you know, setting buildings on fire and attacking ICE agents. That's not going to happen. So what is going to happen? Watch the steps he takes here. Will it be the Insurrection Act? It might, but it might not. It may very well not be that. Now, Greenland is another one. He's been saying, I'm going to invade Greenland, or at least it's ours and basically we can take it. Now, this is a great example of this phenomenon that we're talking about here. I don't think there is any chance he's going to invade Greenland. It would make no sense to invade Greenland. It's a NATO country, which is, of course, under Denmark is the NATO country. And the other part about this, and I keep bringing this up, but I don't know, no one seems to care about it, potentially, at least in the media. But we have a treaty with Greenland, right, with Denmark about Greenland, where we can put troops in there, kind of like as many as we want on bases in Greenland, kind of whenever we want. If we wanted to invade, that would be step one. We are currently not utilizing that power that we have. We could put troops in Greenland on bases. We could start them right there. The invasion would be super easy because we'd already be there. We are not even doing that yet. You know, this is probably much more of a negotiation with Denmark to try to get more rights to natural resources there, because the military part of it, a lot of that we already have if we want to use it, which we're not using it. Which, again, maybe we should rethink that one a little bit. And finally, a bipartisan plan, which always scares me, to create a U.S. reserve for critical minerals. These are the minerals we're talking about, some of them in Greenland. We're also, of course, dealing with China on this front quite a bit. These are the things that make the EV batteries and the microconductor chips and all these important things that we use on a day-to-day basis, massively important to our economy, but also to our national defense. Will we be able to get those? What happens if Taiwan gets, you know, attacked? We might not have any access to these things when it comes to chips or natural resources. That's why Greenland is quite important on this front. Once again, I like that at least Congress is thinking about a real issue and not just the nonsense they typically do, naming buildings after themselves. But, of course, when the word bipartisan is attached to it, I'm always nervous they're going to screw it up somehow. We certainly don't do a great job with the petroleum reserve that we have, which also sort of makes sense from a national perspective, but has been screwed up many, many, many times. We'll see if this particular proposal has any legs to it. Okay, so here's what happened. You're in Japan. What are you going to do in Japan? I mean, especially when it's not baseball season. What are you going to do? You're going to go to the red light district, obviously, for the entertainment that you need. It's an entertainment district, after all. And you're there, and you have a moderate disagreement with someone. What are you going to do? This is Japan, right? You're going to follow the local traditions, and you're going to go out there and get into a karate fight to the death. Right? That's just how Japan operates. That's my understanding. Again, I've never been there, but I assume there are, you know, people flying around with, you know, doing jump kicks all the time, right? Like, that's just how the society operates. Well, apparently, that's changing now because a man has been arrested under an 1889 dueling law after deadly street fight in Tokyo. He got into a fight. He said, I'm sorry that I killed the guy. He feels bad about that. I don't know what's next. Everything I know about Japan is going away. Are they going to make giant nuclear lizards breathing fire illegal too?